Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Now through June 29th, you can earn up to 4x rewards points on your favorite products throughout the store at Safeway. Shop for items like Coca-Cola products, Deer Park Natural Spring Water, Dannon Light and Fit Yogurt, Mott's Original Applesauce, Heinz Ketchup, and McCormick Spices. And earn up to 4x bonus reward points to use for discounts on gas or groceries. Visit Safeway.com or download the Safeway 4U app to earn your reward points today. Offer valid through June 29th. See store for more details.
Everybody, and welcome to another brand new spoiler review episode for She-Hulk here on the
Geek
Buddy.
Hey,
we are back at it again. It is me and Michael Vogel today. Shannon McClung is caught up at work, but we are going to break down episode 7, The Retreat, and we're going to spoiler review this whole thing from top to bottom. So if you haven't watched the episode, go and watch the episode, then come on back and hang out with us. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies. That is Michael Vogel. What do you do, Michael?
I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies, where you can see some of my work on Netflix right now if you want to check out seasons 1 and seasons 2 of Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City.
There you go.
Shannon's not here to hype it up, so I have to do it. So there you go. Right. Check
that's
it out.
Right. That's right. And this is going to be very curious. The episode we're going to break down is called The Retreat. Jen heading off to Emil Blonsky's retreat and all the stuff that she confronts there and all the stuff we get revealed about furthering the idea of mutants in the MCU. And before we dive into it, I just want to give a big shout out to Carbon Health, who powers and sponsors us here on the Geek Buddies and on the Outlaw Nation. Go to carbonhealth.com for any of your healthcare questions, concerns, or needs. Maybe you need to go and do a yurt. Maybe you need to come face-to-face with who you are and have some group therapy. I think they offer that kind of stuff, but they do offer
Carbon
virtual.
Health, and Carbon Health covers your physical and your mental well-being, so I think you are right. Wellness is important, guys. Wellness is a big thing.
That's right. Get on it. You can download the app to have a doc in your pocket. They got urgent care, physical care, virtual care, all of it available for you. They're still testing, doing the COVID testing, which is still raging across the land, ladies and gentlemen. So don't shortchange yourself on your health. Go and get checked out at carbonhealth.com. 80 plus locations in California, 100 plus locations all over the country. All right, Mike, let's jump into this thing. Overall thoughts on episode 7, The Retreat, here on She-Hulk.
I mean, listen, at this point, if you're on board with She-Hulk, you're on board with She-Hulk. And if you're not, you're not. And I'm on board. Like, They are, as far as I'm concerned, they are just continuing to give me delight after delight. Like, I love the tone. I love the silliness. Shannon is not here to talk about the sometimes questionable CG effects on She-Hulk. But, like, I've accepted that, too. You know, you're sort of like, this is what the show is. This is where the technology is on She-Hulk. And if you're on board for it, it is a hell of a ride. I think it is the exact right amount of funny and sweet for what I want it to be. And in a week where I'm dealing with like some heavy, heavy battles in Middle Earth, major, major things going down on House of the Dragon, the Rebellion is not all fluffy rainbows on Coruscant and in Andor, and She-Hulk is just going and hanging out in a yurt with a bunch of C-list supervillains. Like, it's great. Like, it is just silly and ridiculous. But like I said, just manages to be really, really sweet at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great point you bring up. A little counter-programming for all the heavier stuff that's going on in all these other series. Certainly, this is a little bit more of a more relaxed and funnier, or attempt to be funnier, approach to the world. I actually liked this episode. Yes, I still think there were some comedic missteps, because I just don't think I'm going to 100% be on board with the comedy. But I liked a lot of the message of this episode. I liked this idea of, you know, confronting, coming to terms with the other side of yourself. You know, we spend a majority of our lives as regular human beings chastising ourselves with that little inner voice that criticizes us for the little things that we're doing. And we try to show our best selves. And when those other parts of ourselves come out, we can sometimes beat ourselves up too much or think the other part of ourselves is the better part, the part that people want to hang out with. And they don't want to see the other sides of yourself. So I love that there was a great, like, mental health, psychological undertone running throughout this entire episode, and sometimes bubbling up really obviously to the surface, but most of the time it's kind of bubbling underneath as we got through it. We did get some C-list supervillains, and we'll see if that works or not as we break
it. C-list is generous, but yeah.
Sure, fair enough. We'll see less mutants if we really want to tell the truth there. We'll dive into all of that for sure. But let's take a quick break and we'll jump into the Jen storyline right after this.
Bow, beam, boop, bop, bop, boop, 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 beep, bop.
That was Mbop? I think that was Mbop. That was
sure.
Good. That's good. All right. We're going to focus on the Jen's. It's just pretty much the whole episode is the Jen storyline. And then we'll hit the Easter eggs and the Josh stuff on the other side of the break here. What Josh ended up being on the other side of the break here. But let's get into this thing. Jen is getting ready. We see this is like a rom-com. This reminds me of the beginning of Adventures in Babysitting. She's very happy. Yeah. She's glowing. They're going on these dates. We're seeing the Josh and Jen relationship develop. They're going to drive-ins. They're almost kissing, then the handshaking, then almost kissing. And then eventually she does invite him in and they spend the night. And then Josh ghosts her in essence, and she becomes obsessed with trying to check her phone. And look, a lot of us have been there where we're checking our phone. Is like, why haven't they responded back?
It was too real.
It's for sure. So we find out that when she gets to work, Nikki is telling her that she is nominated for Female Lawyer of the Year. Josh does not respond, and we've gotten to Sunday. And while we got to Sunday, we also watch her watching The Great Muppet Caper. Mike, I'm sure you enjoyed that with
a lot to say about it.
Miss Piggy is busting out of jail. Is that symbolism for her? Symbolism for Blonsky? Because right then on Sunday, we get a call. She thinks it's Josh, but it's actually Chuck, ML Blonsky's parole officer, who calls her, says there's an issue with Blonsky's inhibitor, and will she come with him to go to the retreat? They end up at the retreat. It's called Summer Twilights, which I thought was a great name for it. Chuck is recalibrating ML's inhibitor while she's She-Hulk. Then we cut to Manbull and El Aguila getting into things on her car, and as Manbull is pushing the car to go to the garage, Emil delivers a tour of the retreat. We hear about the wood lodge. We hear about the ceremonial sweat yurt. And she leaves Emil after he offers to help her to go and try and find a signal. She finally finds reception as she stumbles into this group meeting with Porcupine and Saracen also there with Emil Blonsky and Manbull and Aguilar. And then Wrecker shows up and she immediately tosses into some chairs that Manbull poorly Manbull set up, which hurts his feelings. And Jen has to go sit in the calming chair. And we now get into this group conversation about therapy, and Wrecker is working through his issues. He takes radical accountability, which I think is awesome. Then this causes eventually from a little bit of peer pressure for Jen to open up her situation about Josh. And we hear a little bit more about Saracen's dad, that Saracen thinks he's a vampire. Is he a vampire? Porcupine won't take off his costume. But as I said, Jen gets into the issues with Josh, and all these guys open the door to hear her, give her some advice. Then they resort to violence, but Wrecker stops them and says, let's hear her out and let's give her some positive feedback. And by the end, Jen is smiling. She's become herself, goes into the yurt, and everyone cheers her on, and her car is towed away by Slot Towing, which is a nice shout out to Dan Slot. So that's overall what happened to Jen in the episode. Let's break it down for Vogel. Where do you want to go? What stood out to you? What really kind of appealed to you about the journey that Jen went on in this episode?
Well, I just really love how the creators of this show are like, we are going to do what we want to do and fuck you. We all know that we've got Matt Murdock waiting in the wings, and half of the fans on Twitter are like, where is Daredevil? Yeah. To the point that like a couple Twitter accounts were just like, hey, it's not the Daredevil show, that one's coming later, this is the She-Hulk show. And I just love that even though we know that that's coming up and we know that we're gonna, you know, wrap up this plot with the Intelligentsia, like this is really just centered on Jen and her journey. And like any sitcom, her romance life, her well-being, how she's feeling about stuff. And I think they did it in such a silly She-Hulk way to kind of take her into this place with all of these, like, D-list supervillains, even bringing Wrecker into the mix of it. I mean, even with Emil Blonsky, I mean, when we all saw these trailers for She-Hulk early on, it's like, oh, is Abomination going to be the big bad guy? Is he the one trying to get Jen's blood? He's running a fucking retreat, man. He's just wanting to talk about some feelings and has his questionable advice that he got off of several self-help books while he was in prison. And, you know, it's really sweet. But also, you know, I don't think that the She-Hulk is necessarily, to your point, John, it's not the absolute funniest comedy on television. Like, there are a lot of comedies on television where the comedy is a lot sharper. But by balancing it out, like, with a level of comedy, a level of, like, nerd comic book, Marvel Easter eggs and connections to the MCU, and most importantly, like, some genuine emotion and sweetness to it, I think the recipe on the whole works really well, even if every single moment doesn't always land.
Yeah.
And I think what really struck me, what really kind of stuck out to me, and I just remember in one of our comments, is either on Twitter or in one of the comments on our early episodes, somebody was complaining that they just felt that Jen Walters was a little bit of a Mary Sue because she doesn't have to deal with the issues that Bruce has to deal with. And I think we talked about this a few weeks back, but this episode particularly, I think, crystallized what makes Jen as a character not just female Hulk, but actually makes her a very different character in her own right. Whereas Bruce Banner struggles with this monster inside of him.
Right.
Jen Walters, as she says very eloquently in this episode, struggles with having that girl in high school that you thought was better than you inside of her.
Yeah.
Like, the struggle of, this isn't, I've got this monster that's going to Hulk out and destroy a city and everyone's going to think I'm a monster and I have to hold this inside of me because if I let it out, people are going to die. This is, I'm feeling really inadequate as a human being because this thing that's inside of me, everybody likes more.
Yeah.
She's prettier. She's taller. She's got better hair.
Right.
People want to date her. Nobody wants to date me. And then kind of wrapping all of that up into this Josh not texting thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, look, it's what you said. We have all been there. We have all had that person who you send a text and after 5 minutes, if you didn't get that text back, you start getting anxiety and you obsess over it for days. And then when you kind of come out of that weird fog of being obsessed with somebody, you're like, why was I a fucking moron? But then you end up back in that space again a month later. So, you know, I thought they just did a really nice job in this episode of kind of getting to the meat with just two episodes left of this whole Jen She-Hulk, what the deal is with her and what she's trying to struggle with is finding that balance of both sides of her.
Yeah, it's been a more overt approach to it because they've had 12 episodes. Remember, we haven't had a Hulk solo movie with Mark Ruffalo. We've had to see Ruffalo struggle with his Hulk stuff in scenes within movies that are Avengers movies or movies that have another character as the titular character in the title. So this is where we're getting a little more time with her. So we've gotten glimpses of Bruce's struggle with it, certainly, but we're getting way more time here with you. And it's going to be different. A man's approach to this situation is different than a woman's approach to this situation, at least in the way they're portraying it. So I like that we're getting a newer approach to it. And Tatiana Maslany is doing an excellent job yet again, showing you why she was cast as the lead in this show. You know, a couple of the comedic moments I found myself in the last few episodes, or kind of last couple of episodes, thinking about, oh, Alison Brie might have nailed that a little bit stronger. But these more emotional moments, these more like this kind of lighthearted approach to her mental health, you still sense there's a seriousness to her. And I think Tatiana's talent really comes through. Not that Alison couldn't do that too, but I feel like it's a more natural thing with the way Tatiana is playing it that I find myself connected to this character more and more. Look, I like her. Whether the show works every episode or not is a separate conversation, but I like her as this character and I'm invested in her as this character and where she's going, you know, and they do give her a lot to confront. You know, it seems like every guy is kind of not the right guy for her. And then we find out, of course, what happened with Josh, which we'll get to. But we also find this nice thing about her that she really does want to help people. She really does want to be the best person she can be. And although she has confronting the fact that this other part of her, everybody seems to love a bit more, she's figuring it out step by step, piece by piece, and is opening the door to surrender her vulnerability to people to kind of negotiate that, you know, with Nikki in separate scenes earlier in the last few episodes, but then here with a bunch of people she just met for the first time, and Blonsky kind of opening up about the struggles that she's going with. And I love that it was a bunch of dudes who are trying to, like, you know, kind of help her through this situation, who are also dealing with their own identity crises and where they should be, who they are. Like Aguilar, should I be a matador? I don't want to be a matador. That's so cliche, fighting with Man Bull. So we're seeing that. Oh, Porcupine wanted to take the costume off, which is in essence show who they really are underneath the She-Hulk, underneath the costume. All these things, you're seeing the symbolism on all of them. And I think it was so fun to see overall. And I don't know where I fit on the Emil Blonsky stuff, though, Mike. I'll be honest with you, because the inhibitor thing was that Aguilar sword, which obviously we saw shot bioelectric stuff out. Or is this something else? I don't know. So I've got my questions, and I like that it's giving me a little hesitation on certain things and the way they're being portrayed.
Yeah. There's either a bigger plan in this series of Blonsky, yeah, or they're just really wisely keeping their options open. Like, mm-hmm, he seems really great. Seems like he's worked some stuff out. But that whole, oh, this just did, this went off because of this. And yeah, even when he was like, what did he say? He said something about his gang. And then yeah, he was like, please make it clear this is not a gang. I'm like, look, I love that he is there helping these guys, and they all seem like they're really responding well to their treatment, yeah, at the center. Also, a former supervillain bringing a bunch of D-list supervillains around to a private area with no cell reception where they can talk about whatever they want.
Good point.
This could go either way. I'm just saying.
Right. Where they look at him as their leader, who is guiding them out of these situations. And so because he helped them, they feel like they owe him, right? Almost like a semi-cult.
But it's also like, this is what Marvel does pretty well. And this is, you know, I mean, I've said this 1,000 times when we talk about Marvel versus DC and everything else, but it's that patience.
Yeah.
It's that,
yeah,
setting Emil Blonsky up like this. Look, if they decide in the next two episodes that all of a sudden Emil Blonsky and the D-listers that helped Jen in this episode and it was super sweet are all now the big bad guys and they're all going to attack Jen, that would feel a little bit forced.
Right.
Like,
right,
that would be like, really? They were so nice to her. Like, what's going on? This feels like a 180. But yeah, now MCU just has Emil Blonsky up there doing what he's doing. So in a Hulk movie down the line, or in, right, the Thunderbolts movie, or anywhere in the MCU in the foreseeable future, if you ever want to circle back to Emil Blonsky, and yeah, oh, by the way, maybe he's not being completely as innocent as he says down, yeah, the line, I think everybody would buy it, and that would be a fun twist and a really cool turn. So yeah, I think setting him up where he is and just leaving him there is a great move on their part. It's like, you know, if you think of the MCU as just a massive four-level chessboard, and Kevin Feige is just sitting there with his baseball cap on all day, just like staring at it. Sometimes you just put a piece there and you go, I'm just going to leave this piece here for like a year and a half.
Right.
We got other things to do. We got mutants. We got the Daredevil thing over here. You know, I mean, we're going to get to it after the break, but every single one of those guys in that therapy session at some point in time has fought the Defenders or worked with the Defenders or been, yeah, against the Defenders. And so with Daredevil coming out, with Punisher maybe coming down the pipe, with some of these other characters coming in, yeah, again, just putting these characters in the universe and being like, leaving them there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might not come, yeah, to fruition until Daredevil. It might not come to fruition until a Defender series, but sure, they just exist. So when you get to a Daredevil series or a Defender series or Echo or anywhere, yeah, and all of a sudden you need someone for them to fight, and you're like, oh, Blonsky's up there at his self-help retreat. Why don't we have that be a thing? Comes right back in. So I think it's really, really smart.
Tell me about what you think about how they took Jen through the path of this episode, confronting this part of it, and then eventually opening up to these guys and then going into the yurt. What do you think they were trying to say with her character throughout this episode, where she was caught up in this obsession with Josh and texting her? I mean, she's listening to Mbop to try to take her mind off of it, gets to this retreat. She's certainly still, even though her personal life may be a little in shambles, she's very successful. You've got Nikki telling her she's nominated for Female Lawyer of the Year. She rolls right into Summer Twilights when poor Chuck is like, hold on, wait. Even when her Prius is kind of destroyed here, she doesn't flip out or lose her mind. she, you know, kind of tells Manboy, you got to pony up some money here for to handle the situation. And then eventually comes to a better place about things after unleashing her anger initially at Wrecker, after she comes out of the yurt and everyone's like cheering her on and she gets a card from the guys and all of this. So what do you think about the journey they took her on and what they were confronting here? Because I think this is the first time, aside from Downey Jr. or Tony Stark's PTSD stuff, where they've really dealt with the mental health aspects of taking on something like this.
Yeah, and it's a good point. I mean, I think what the whole episode kind of represented was Jen, look at episode one. She is very clear. She has no interest in being a superhero, right, being a part of the superhero life. She thinks Bruce Banner is emotionally damaged. She makes some very valid points about his emotional damage and his trauma and what he has not faced by just being a part of a superhero team, and that he doesn't really have a life. That he, like, you know, he's in a lab in on an island with no friends and no family, and he's like, yeah, things are good. This is the life. And she's like, that's not the life I want. She refuses to be She-Hulk at the beginning, kind of gets pulled into it. Gets pulled into the superhero law division because she can't get a job anywhere else. Right. So she's kind of stuck being that. So she's sort of like, she doesn't want a superhero suit. She doesn't want to have to get special clothes. She doesn't want to do this. She's always sort of fighting against the She-Hulk part of herself. And because the show is She-Hulk, we're constantly finding reasons why we have to drag her into it. Right. But, you know, she's constantly like, I wish I didn't have this part of me. I wish I was just Jen. And that part of her, yes, is a, you know, 7 foot tall, 8 foot tall green woman. But that part of her also is the superhero part of the MCU.
Right.
That she hasn't really been a part of. And so in this episode, she is sort of stranded in, like, you know, the wellness center of supervillains. And she, the only people that she has to talk to here are a bunch of people who are just in this superhero life.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not very good at it, but they're a part of that superhero life. And so, kind of working through her Josh issues with them and ultimately working through her She-Hulk issues, that she has this thing where She-Hulk is sort of a crutch, but she's sort of jealous of her thing. And that them kind of being like, why don't you let, we want to see Jen, but also we love She-Hulk. The letter they love, the letter they write her at the end is, we love Jen, we love She-Hulk.
Right.
Like, we love both sides. And so I think even her getting in the yurt and leaning into their advice and kind of just accepting that this whole day kind of was good for her, I think is also her kind of realizing that this is, like, Bruce was right in that her life is never going to be the same. But she was right in that she doesn't have to give up Jen. So, like, this whole show is, she does something, like, Jen Walters does something that, aside from Matt Murdock, most people don't do. Like, the entire nature of being a superhero is, hey, Peter Parker, sucks to be Spider-Man. Nobody even knows who the fuck you are anymore. You know, like, so many characters. It's like Captain America. It's like, hey, you were frozen in ice and all your friends are dead and you don't get to be with Peggy until we get done with you in three phases of Marvel movies. You know, every single person, even Tony Stark, who seems to have it really, really great, can't ever quite find that balance. He's too busy superheroing and him and Pepper break up. And then when they finally get everything right, and they're all good on their own, he has to go save the world and open up time travel. Like, it's always this balance. And Jen Walters is kind of navigating, we're watching her in real time navigate all of the real life issues that go with being a superhero. You know, the creative team, when they were like relaunching the show, they were like, look, we don't want to tell the story about the giant third act, you know, European village that gets taken up into space by robots.
Right.
We want to tell the story of, like, you're a superhero and you have to do the laundry. You know, you're the superhero and you're going on a date. You're the superhero and the guy doesn't text you and you watch arguably the absolute best of all the Muppet movies by a mile, The Great Muppet Caper. And I think that that is a nice welcome addition to the MCU.
Yeah, and I want to clarify my comment I made just a few minutes ago about this, mental health. Yeah, obviously in Avengers Endgame, they deal with survivor's guilt. You know, Cap is leading that group with one of the Russo brothers there and talking about moving on past the 5 years. Obviously, WandaVision dealing with grief, certainly. But this is what this episode felt like, it was more directly dealing with philosophy, with the ideas of how to come to terms with who you are, all these things in a more overt way that us regular people who are not superheroes deal with therapy, deal with, you know, group therapy, all these kinds of things, tactics that we use to kind of come to terms and accept and love ourselves for the things that we are, both good and bad, the flaws and all, not good and bad. I don't even want to do that, but flaws and all, And that's a tough journey to be on. And I think this episode was the first, one of the first things in the MCU where they overtly made it a central part of an episode with a superhero.
I mean, yeah, I know. You're right. I think that superhero stories in general work because to a degree, a lot of them are about trauma. Like right. It's the big secret of superheroes. Like all of us who are nerds about DC and Marvel and Invincible yeah. and Image Comics and everything, like, yeah, we love cool, bright costumes and awesome powers and epic world-ending battles. But what we really love is the interpersonal relationships and the soap opera of it. Yeah. And the fact that all of these stories are just over-the-top colorful ways for us to talk about the human experience and the loves and the hates and the trauma that we deal with. And yeah, so like whether it be WandaVision or Bucky in Falcon and Winter Soldier or Tony or Cap running that survivors group at the beginning of Endgame, like every single like superhero stories naturally deal with a level of trauma. To your point, putting Jen in the circle of trust in the calming chair and having everybody overtly talk about trauma and overtly talk about where you're at and have Jen kind of say, this is what I'm dealing with. It doesn't deal with it in a subtextual way. It's just dealing with it like this is what the episode is talking about and allows them to talk about it in a more direct way.
Yeah, I agree completely. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll jump into these heroes, these villains, possibly.
I mean, you know, they're heroes to me in this episode. They're heroes to me.
Yeah, heroes to you. And Emil Blonsky's the thing and Josh's thing right after this.
I'm holding out for a hero till the end of the night.
That's good. You guys don't know, Michael's got a great voice. He does great karaoke.
That is false.
That's not false at all. All right, let's get into this thing, man. What an interesting collection of people here at Summer's Twilight, as Michael pointed out so astutely. Blonsky has eliminated cell reception, Wi-Fi service almost completely from the place, isolated everybody, and we find out that he's been treating these D-list, as Michael said, supervillains, maybe, but probably mutants.
Let's just call them villains. I don't know that there's super in there yet.
Fair enough. But, well, you know, villains, fine. Manbull is, if you know the comics, Manbull is essentially a super soldier experiment gone wrong. Aguilar is a combination of characters, but yes, is the Matador kind of character there. We've got Saracen, who may or may not be a vampire. Saracen was introduced in Blade and is one of the oldest living vampires, if not the oldest living vampire, if that's really him there. And Porcupine, there's a little bit about Porcupine created that super suit, then stole the super suit. And as Michael said, they've all fought the Defenders. They've fought the number of Daredevil. Manbull, I think, has fought Daredevil. Iron Fist is with Porcupine, I think. Or Aguilar, sorry, with Porcupine, with Iron Fist. And then Porcupine has been involved in other battles as well there. So what are your thoughts on bringing these characters in? As you said, Kevin Feige playing 4D chess. What role are these characters, and Wrecker as well coming in now being redeemed? What role do you think they're all playing here in this situation?
I mean, I don't think that there's a lot of I don't think these guys are like heavy hitters that we should be like keeping an eye on for phase 5 and 6 of the MCU.
I don't could be but on Secret I think Wars. That, I can see
but
that.
But I think I mean sure. Like maybe look, I'm not like any of these guys could take off. I'm not no shame to any of them, but I think you know, the Marvel universe, the DC universe as well, like both of them are filled with bad guys, thugs, and villains who a comic book creator needed some low-level somebody for someone to fight. And, let's put a guy in a porcupine suit, or let's have a guy who sort of looks like a bull. And then they get used again, and they get used again, and they just sort of become a part of this universe, but at a very, like, lower level. Like, these are just characters that you use when you need some kind of bad guy. You're like, we need some kind of bad guy. Let's just use somebody. Like, who do we have in the files? Like, look up the files. Who do we got? And I think that's kind of what's happening here is the idea was Blonsky is running his wellness retreat. Let's get some of these, like, you know, Easter egg villains from the MCU. Who do we got? And you go into the files. You're like, hey, Feige, you got any plans for Manbull? And he was like, oh, no, I do not have plans for Manbull. You take him. And then there's things like, like El Aguilar, like he's a mutant.
Yeah, El Aguilar is a mutant. Yeah.
So in the comics, at least, he's a mutant. Now, does that mean he's a mutant in She-Hulk? No, but given where Ms. Marvel ended, with them very clearly pointing out that there is a mutation in her genome, Maybe he is a mutant. Like, maybe we are just going to start seeing these characters that were like, yeah, I just got these powers at some point. I don't know.
Yeah.
Saracen is interesting only because we've got Werewolf by Night coming.
Yes.
And we have a Blade movie that is at some level of in the works.
Yeah.
So, I think like Bo DiMaio, I think is the latest, the news is that he's rewriting the entire Blade script.
Yes.
The guy who's doing the X-Men cartoon, the most handsome man I've ever seen in animation. But anyways, sorry, just went on a little tangent
nice
there
tangent
in my own
there.
Head. Sorry. Just gonna recover from that. But yeah, like having a vampire show up and we know Blade is in the works, whether Saracen is an actual vampire or not. So I think each one of them sort of is like, okay, well, this is cute. Porcupine, I think they were just like, we need someone who's going to be a really funny joke, and yeah, that costume is ridiculous.
But he did go up against the Fantastic Four, so, and the X-Men,
yeah,
so could be opening some doors. But then again, I all villains have gone up against almost all the heroes, right, Mike? So you might not, it might just be a stretch to say they might be kind
exactly
of weaving that in here, yeah.
And then I thought them kind of bringing Wrecker back into it was actually kind of cute. Like, that was a nice little moment. I mean, it was a great moment because She-Hulk attacking him after what he did, totally justified.
Absolutely.
But just everybody's reaction to it was really funny. And then putting her in the chair and putting him in the chair and having them just talk things out instead of punching it out, which is usually what you do in a superhero show, it was like, well, look at that. Like, that, it does work when you just talk through things. How about that?
Subtle message as well from the show saying, hey guys, we all need to get into a room and talk all this stuff out, find some common ground, especially with how divided we are in our world lately. It's not a bad message to be putting out there.
Totally. And I think the bigger thing that I think is fun about She-Hulk in general and what we're able to do now is, now that we are in phase four, over a decade, 30 plus film and TV project, like,
right,
we are so far in, is that you're now seeing this, you know, when Tony Stark was Iron Man, if there was all of a sudden some like mutant guy who looked like a bull, that would be a big deal in the Marvel Universe because
right,
there weren't that many superpowered people. Like, in those early days with the Marvel Universe, like, people with powers was a big deal.
Yeah.
Now what we're seeing, and we started to see it with Damage Control in No Way Home and Ms. Marvel, and we're kind of seeing this go through, is that the world at this point, through science experiments gone wrong and radioactive spiders and multidimensional portals and gods from outer space and now mutation, we're getting a pretty full world where people with powers aren't just trying to save the world or destroy the world. They are social influencers. They are just trying to make a living. They are just living their lives. They are running wellness retreats. So we're seeing
some people
a world
don't want
to
be part of a group. Yeah, they want to go and do these other things. Yeah, great point.
So we're now living in this world where being a superpowered individual is not that unique.
Right.
And
bless you.
Sorry. And that's going to be really interesting. That presents a whole different kind of storytelling that you're going to be able to tell. And it makes super teams like the Defenders a lot more interesting and gives them a lot more to do.
Right, ground level
when you
stuff.
Have these sort of ground level guys, you know, like, you know, the Defenders might not be going up against Kang the Conqueror or Thanos, but somebody's got to stop Man-Bull when he goes on like a spree of barbecue, robbing barbecue restaurants or something. I don't know what Man-Bull does on his off days, but something.
That's for sure. Yeah, no, I like it too. And let's not leave out the werewolves and the vampires. I know you mentioned earlier, but that expands the world out even more. Doctor Strange's mystical stuff as well. So we are, you know, the world is expanding quickly within the Marvel Universe. And people, I've already heard people, you know, already grousing or complaining that they, you know, that they're having a hard time keeping up with all the madness of it all. But Marvel, just like the creators, as you said earlier, Mike, are like, we're moving forward. You got to catch up of what we're doing because this is where we're going. And already the early buzz for Werewolf by Night is so strong, and we're only days away, right? I think October 7th is when that's coming out. So I'm hoping I get a screener at some point on Monday or Tuesday for that thing to take a look at it. So we're not that far away from that happening as well. So much is coming here, and Black Panther Wakanda Forever is around the corner as well. So there's so much.
I swear to God, I was walking my dog the other morning, and I just out of nowhere was like, holy shit, does Wakanda Forever come out in November?
Yeah, right.
Like, it's coming out like in 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's coming real close. And look, I know it's not Marvel, but Black Adam is also on the 21st. So we're only days away from Black Adam. So I'm just
cool. Whatever.
Yeah, just throwing it out there. Cool. Yeah, yeah, I liked.
Thanks for reminding me of the other stuff.
You know, I'm just saying. But look, I liked them all coming in. Kevin Feige said in 2019 that he was going to have non-marquee mutants kind of slowly lay the groundwork for this, rather than having a big explosion of mutants. And I kind of like this approach. We've had the idea of mutants being a big deal, although the word couldn't be said or whatever. But I like this idea that it's a more subtle approach. We're getting the appetizer before the meal. And I dig that because it kind of gets you used to this idea. And then, boom, when it happens, it's going to change things. Because, things could be pointed out down the road that it's both Jen and Bruce who are mutants. And it's not necessarily the idea that their body somehow responds better to gamma, that they actually were mutants and this just triggered that within them. That's all possible down the road. So I like that the door is being opened slowly, not kicked open, so that we can
get used. Well, and I think it also, look, obviously we all love the X-Men.
Yes.
We are all pro, I mean, mostly, I'm assuming if you are a comic book fan, you're pro-mutant. You don't think that mutants should be destroyed. But I think doing it this way creates an ability for Marvel to make a... It's sort of like with the Sokovia Accords.
Yeah.
And Civil War. Like, we all love the superheroes. We know that Captain America is going to do the right thing. But the Sokovia Accords is an interesting idea because it says, just forget about your favorite heroes. Do we really just want all of these superpowered individuals to be able to ignore all borders, diplomatic, anything, no government oversight, and just go do what they want to do? And, you know, and that's a compelling argument, because when Tony's like, yeah, we don't have that right, but Cap's like, I don't trust this government. And you're like, yep, both sides have good points here.
Yeah.
And by having this sort of slow rollout of mutant stuff and just filling the MCU with all of these superpowered individuals, you start to see how, as just a average Joe living out your life in the MCU, the fact that you went from, oh, I'm worried that somebody might have a gun and rob me, to I'm worried that somebody has bioelectric powers, telekinesis, telepathy, or can turn into a giant man monster and attack me in an alley, starts to make you more anxious. And you might say, hey, we got to do something about this. Right. And then damage control, the government oversight, let's see what we do about these superpowered individuals, all the way leading up to Sentinels. Not that that's the right thing to do, because obviously we're always going to be on the side of the mutants and like the rights that mutants represent, but it creates a more compelling argument, just like the Sokovia Accords, where you can go like, okay, this doesn't just seem like mustache twirling bad guys.
Right.
There's a case to be made here. And so I think like doing it this way is kind of the more interesting way, like you were saying.
Okay. Yeah, let's take a quick break. I want to jump into two more points here, and then we're going to wrap up this review. We'll be right back right after this. Yeah?
I got nothing. Good. No. Nothing. I'm not the Shannon McClung jukebox.
Hey, just put a quarter in. All right, let's deal with this Emil Blonsky real quick. The inhibitor thing, I want to ask you a question, your thoughts on this, Mike, because I was reading some breakdowns and I hadn't even considered this idea that the inhibitors, of course, the inhibitors are like trackers. Obviously, I got that, the connection, real world connection to our world now. Some people have these things put on them to monitor them on their ankles, ankle monitors, or whatever you want to say. But in the comics, inhibitors have been used in very extreme ways in Genosha, having them be used to enslave mutants. So is this maybe a tease, as you said, yet again, Kevin Feige laying the groundwork for this to be used later on down the road with this inhibitor situation? Is Emil Blonsky aware of this? Is he messing with the inhibitor on purpose to see how far he can go with it? Does he sense that maybe this inhibitor may cause problems? Because obviously he's gamma affected too by being part of that old thing that Bruce, how Bruce became the Hulk. So do you think there's more to come with this inhibitor situation?
Well, I think maybe. I think if you watch the trailer for the back half of the season for She-Hulk, we clearly see Abomination as Abomination.
Yes.
So he's doing something with that inhibitor chip he's doing something.
Yeah.
But I think, again, just like I was saying before the break, I think what's interesting is Emil Blonsky's a big bad guy. He was a big bad guy in Incredible Hulk. So when the government, through the parole board, says, hey, you need to wear an inhibitor collar so that you can't use your powers, we all watching the show go, villain should wear the inhibitor collar. That seems good.
Yeah.
It seems like it makes sense.
It's now, a good middle ground. Yeah.
Okay, that seems fair. But cut to you know, a couple TV shows from now, yeah, and you have a 10-year-old kid who has some kind of mutant ability who has to wear an inhibitor collar to school every day,
right,
and you go, that feels a little bit weirder. And then, like, when they're putting everybody who has any kind of super ability or mutant gene or anything, now let's go, like, okay, like, why don't you, everybody, go to your local clinic, and we're going to swab you. And if you have this specific mutation, we're just going to put an inhibitor collar on you.
Right.
Just to be safe. You have to wear it every day, government says. You're like, oh, okay, now this is feeling really weird. And so you can see how doing something in a way in She-Hulk in a nice comedy show where you're like, oh, yeah, Blonsky should wear an inhibitor collar. Sure. But that goes, you know, you watch how that snowballs really, really quick, and you go, ooh. And then you go, wow, if only there was a superhero lawyer who could represent all these people.
Great point.
And really fight for their rights in a court of law. I wonder who that could be.
Well, that's a great point. And I agree with you. I think they're laying this groundwork here for this to be used in a certain way, how they want to use it down the road. But I wonder where are the seven women? Was it seven or eight women that were his soulmates? Where are the seven soulmates? They did not appear in this episode at all. Is that a budget cut, or is he taking care of them? What's the situation?
I feel like, it depends. I guess it depends on how accurate and true the closing credit artwork is in the show. Because I think in the Oblonsky episode, they showed him riding away on the bus waving, and they were all chasing after the bus crying and hollering after him. So maybe he ditched them as soon as he got out of prison.
Maybe
they have their own little yurt somewhere on the property and they are just hanging out. It's a big property. We didn't see all of it. So maybe that's what they're doing.
It was a big property. I would, if that retreat really existed, I had no problem going there for a week, for God's sakes. It was fantastic. And anyway, shout out to Abominaste. That is awesome. Abominaste is genius, and that should immediately be on shirts everywhere. All right, let's deal with Josh. As I predicted, and as Shannon's trying to take kind of semi-credit for predicting, Josh was a bad guy here. He did get rid of his nice guy act here at the end, because we cut to 3 days earlier after the whole adventure with Jen and her being in a better place with Dan from Slot Trucking, hint, hint, taking her out of there. He takes a picture of her. He copies the content on her phone and then texts Hulk King about successfully taking her blood. So, sadly, yet another guy in her life who she maybe was kind of, well, she was clearly interested in or opening the doors to, turning on her. So what are your thoughts on this? Did this seem too easy, or did you like that they made this twist, and did you see it coming?
Well, yeah, no offense to you or to Shannon, but I don't think that this was a twist that was a big shocker.
I'm just saying.
When Josh showed up at that wedding, I was like, you are so hot and you are so nice and you are so perfect and you like French fries. Oh God, you're a bad guy. You're a bad one. You're part of this intelligentsia bullshit. So when they did, you know, as soon as he was gone at the beginning and he wasn't texting back, it was like, okay, well, I see what happened here. So when they kind of cut back at the end to show it, I mean, I think that's still the right way to do it. I think that living with Jen's uncertainty, even though we were a little bit more clear, probably a lot of us were on what was happening, I think still doing it that way and then showing it at the end is a good way to sort of tee us up for these next two episodes.
So it was
a bummer, because he was just so cute. He was so cute. Like, he showed up and he was being goofy, and I was like, oh, I was like, if I was at that wedding, I would go home with you. And even if I knew that you were the bad guy, I might still go home with you anyway. That's how cute you are.
Yeah.
So it was a bummer, but I also just, it kind of leads to, you know, this whole intelligentsia thing. I just think the creators of She-Hulk deserve a little bit of credit for doing a female-driven Marvel sitcom on Disney Plus, and knowing without any doubt how a subset of the internet was going to respond to this show, and making them the big bads of the show and nailing everything they say. Like, you look at what they're saying on intelligentsia, and then you go to scroll through some Twitter feeds on She-Hulk, and you're like, same, same. So, like, I think they deserve a lot of credit for going, let's just make these toxic boys on Twitter the bad guys in the show, because they're going to hate it anyway. So let's double down. And I think that's awesome.
They had the exchange with her and Nikki in the law office where she said, I don't care what these people think about me. So that was a very overt shot, which is, of course, pissing them off even more. And they're making these angry videos about the whole thing. And getting their views, which is really what it's all about. I don't know how authentic some of that criticism is sometimes, but you know, you work, you make your business, you make your money. I want to hit this emoji thing real quick before we wrap up. The emoji is a broken vial of blood, or sorry, is a syringe of blood, then the green chemical thing, the beaker or whatever it is, the test tube, sorry, and then the thumbs up. So he's taking her blood. Where are we going with this? Are we creating another Hulk here? And if the leader is involved in this, are we creating another Hulk? Or is this more for the leader to understand how to defeat the Hulk and defeat Abomination and defeat the She-Hulk? Or is there a new Hulk? Because we know that there is a Red Hulk in the comics. It has been usually attached to Thunderbolt Ross, but other people have been a Red Hulk. So are we opening the door for the Red Hulk down the road like this, even though, of course, the late, great William Hurt has passed away as Thunderbolt Ross? Earlier this week on the Hot Mic, Jeff Snyder broke the news that Harrison Ford was possibly or had been in talks to be Thunderbolt Ross. And wouldn't that be interesting to have him be Red Hulk as well? So what do you think?
Now I'm just picturing the Red Hulk with like Harrison Ford's gravelly voice coming out of it. And I'm like, oh, don't talk to me about Star Wars. I'm fucking done with Han Solo. Roar.
She was my wife. what do we do with it? Is this a, am I making too much of this emoji, or do you think maybe?
No. I don't think you're making too much about it. Because what the emoji represent. I mean, look, episode one, when Bruce was like, hey, Jen, please watch me destroy your blood and let me explain to you that I must destroy this blood, because if anybody got this blood, that would be bad, because this blood is very dangerous that you and I have inside of us and nobody should have it except us. It was like, okay, well, that's a big spotlight. That's a big spotlight on where this is going. So the fact that the Wreckers were trying to get her blood, that what's his face, weirdo who dated her. Weirdo who dated her, who clearly is kind of wrapped up in this intelligentsia thing, who like referred to her as a specimen.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing, it's very clear that you are correct that her blood and this Hulk blood getting out there now, is it the leader? Like, I think it would be great if it was. That would, like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I think that would be a great reveal leading up to the leader being the big bad in Captain America 4. Right. Is it, you know, just a bunch of dude bros on the internet who think they could be better Hulks than some chick, which I'm scrolling through Twitter and that doesn't feel like it's outside the realm of possibility.
It's true, very true.
You know, so it could be a lot of things. It might have nothing to do with the leader or anything at all, but I think the idea of giving more people that ability, you know, is this ultimately going to be the way that we get an Amadeus Cho? You know, is this, you know, end up with other, it's not just Red Hulk who's out there. There's Amadeus Cho and there's other characters. So is this a way to start spreading that Hulk thing around, which causes problems for both Jen and Bruce because they would feel a responsibility? So I think whatever they're doing is going to be, you know, She-Hulk being the type of show that it is, I don't think that it's going to run into the similar, I don't want to say problems because I liked it more than you did, but like the similar critique that shows like WandaVision and some of these other shows have gotten, where you kind of have this show that kind of works how it does, and then the last two episodes, they kind of turn into their equivalent of the third act movie battle, and it doesn't stick the landing because it doesn't do everything that everybody wants. I don't think that She-Hulk is going to end up going, oh, in these last two episodes, we have to like have She-Hulk attack an entire army of Hulks, and we have to do this and that. I think it'll probably be more of a Jen-focused story with some elements of action. She's definitely going to superhero up and wear her super suit.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be that. But I think that whatever happens with this blood, even if she destroys the sample or does whatever she does, some of it's going to get out, or there's going to be whatever this thing is, it's going to spin off into other ramifications for the MCU going forward.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true, and I think that's what I'm looking forward to. And cut to two episodes from now, and Jen's fighting a whole team of Hulks. We shall see. I mean, but yeah,
hopefully. It is. But it is. I mean, I just want to say, like, you know, because we do. I mean, we've done it. Everybody does. Like, we all love the MCU, but their MCU has its complaints. In the beginning of the MCU, we all complained that the villains weren't as awesome as the heroes.
Right.
And then we got Loki, and then we got Thanos, and then we got Killmonger, and we calmed down because we were like, all right, you know, you did a good job. But there's also that sort of critique with the movies and the shows so far, where you kind of get to this big epic third act battle that doesn't really do everything, or you know, and like, I think She-Hulk is going to do a nice job of sort of sidestepping that, just because this show is really emotionally more about Jen accepting herself as a superhero. Like, like if we get to the end of the show and Jen goes, oh, I can be a superhero and I can be a lawyer, I can do both of these things.
Right.
I am now a complete person. That's where the show is going. Like, that's the emotional landing that we want to get by episode 9. So her stopping the samples, beating up some intelligentsia goons, teaming up with Daredevil, all that stuff is going to be fun.
Yeah.
But we don't need, Jen saved New York City from an army of rampaging, incel Twitter hulks. Right. Like that we don't, I mean, although an army of incel Twitter hulks now is something that I want to see, but we don't necessarily need to see it by the end of this season.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And I think that's the great thing about the message of the show, right? At the end of the day, accepting yourself can turn you into even more of a superhero in your own life, right? And that's a good thing. That's a healthy thing too. It doesn't mean you have to kiss your own ass all the time and go on social media and say how great you are. It just means, hey, coming to terms with who you are, loving who you are, accepting who you are, you'll be surprised how much more power you will have in your life, superhero or otherwise. So that's a fantastic message, I think, for a show to do.
And also, nowadays. no offense to anybody in Matt Murdock's life.
Yeah.
But I really just want Jen and Matt to date just for a little while now.
What? Stop it.
I mean, no. I'm just saying, I know, listen, I know Matt has a lot of ladies in his life already. He's got a packed dance card. I'm just saying, like, the guy that gets to show up and say, hey, you can be a superhero and you can be a lawyer. And by the way, you and I can go out and beat up bad guys, and we can also eat French fries and argue about law. Like, he's kind of the perfect guy for her.
Yeah, perfect guy friend.
I'm just saying.
Perfect guy friend. I don't know about
that. Oh, my God. Get out of here. Don't Harry and Sally me. Don't Harry and Sally me.
Wait, they ended up together. I'm not saying. all right. Well, there you go. Any final words, Mike? I think we talked about everything, but any final words?
No, I think we did. Look, I mean, like I said, like it's clear. Like it's to me, the show is delightful and fun. And I think it's putting a spotlight on an aspect of the Marvel Universe that we don't get to spend as much time in some of the more serious shows, which I also love. But I'm just having a blast and can't wait to see more and more and more of Jen Walters in the MCU.
I will say this. I needed an episode like this after the last few uneven episodes for me. I liked this episode. This makes me fall back in love with the world a little bit more. Yeah, and again, did all the comedy work? Did all the D-list villains showing up work for me? Not 100%, but the spirit of it worked for me, and I like that. They put me in a better place, and I look forward to these next two episodes and seeing how they wrap things up, because it's always about sticking the landing. That's what they all say. No matter, you may stumble a little bit in the middle, but if you stick that landing, that's what they're going to remember. So I hope that they do, because I am championing this. I love Tatiana in the role, and she was really great here, showing you so many levels of what Jen's going through. So I want to see what we're going to get here in these next two episodes, and I'm excited again to watch them. That's a good thing for me personally. All right, well, there you go. That's our spoiler review for episode 7, The Retreat, here of She-Hulk from the MCU and Disney Plus. Thank you all so much for watching this episode. I usually go to Shannon on this, so here's what I'll say. Just follow us, as you see right above our heads.
Hey guys, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at @geek_buddies, on Instagram @the_geek_buddies. If you would like to follow John Rocha, he's @TheRochaSays. If you would like to follow me, I am @MKToon.
Well, you should also put him, and you have to Shannon
the Geek.
Shannon the Geek Buddy.
He's not on the screen. I'm just reading the screen, John. I can't.
Fair enough. You can follow Shannon @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. Michael, what else do we have to tell?
Well, look, if you enjoyed this chat about the lighter side of the MCU and you enjoy talking about all things geeky, we are the place for you. And here's what you can do to help us continue doing what we do. You can hit that like button below. You can join, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page. There's a ton of amazing content there. Lots of Geek Buddies content, more Geek Buddies content than ever right now with all the stuff that's out there to watch. So definitely tune into all of that. Leave your comments below. Are you loving She-Hulk? Are you not liking She-Hulk? Does it not work for you? Do you think it's gonna stick a landing? Who do you think is going to be the big bad? Like, where do you think things are going to go? And how do you think She-Hulk is stacking up in up against the other Disney Plus shows? Let us know in the comments below. If you are listening to us on podcasts, wherever podcasts are available, go ahead and leave us some stars, leave us some comments so that we go up in the rankings and more people can find us. And the best thing that you guys can always do is retweet this video, post it to your socials, and send it to your friends to tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
Yeah, and please do everything Michael said on the podcast side of things. You know, we're on iHeartRadio. We jumped over there, and so getting our numbers up, getting our download numbers up are really important. So if you watch us here, we'd love for you to subscribe, because then that gets us numbers. You don't have to like listen to all the episodes, but if you subscribe, that's the numbers we're looking for. So it'll download on your phone. You can delete the episode because you saw it, but at least it downloads and it gives us a download, which we appreciate, and a subscription number. So thank
you. We are great on a walk. You're walking your dog, your dog with the Geek Buddies. We're great on the treadmill. You're getting tired of running those laps. Listen to the Geek Buddies. Like, we will go with you wherever you need to go. You get a doc in your pocket with Carbon Health, but you get a geek in your, a nerd in your, just put us in your pocket.
There you go. You get a buddy on your body. How about that? Well, no, that's not good either. Never mind. Skip that. But speaking of Carbon Health, thank you to Carbon Health for powering and sponsoring us here on the Outlaw Nation and the Geek Buddies. We appreciate them madly. If you have any healthcare questions, concerns, or needs, please head on over there to carbonhealth.com and get it checked out today. They've got places all over the country, 80 locations in California alone, offering virtual care, in-person care, and urgent care, COVID testing, whatever you need. They want to build specific healthcare plans just for you so that you can go at your pace and get into the best shape of your life and stick around for a little bit longer in our world and hang out with us on the Geek Buddies. All right, y'all, take care of yourselves. Be well, and we'll talk to you next time with another spoiler review here from the
Geek Buddies!
Hey!
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.